to greet you this morning in the precious name of Jesus. I trust that in our lives he is becoming more and more precious, just like our brother talked about, as we diligently seek God and make him continual Lord of our life. What a privilege. What a challenge. May we rise to that challenge today. This morning I'd like to direct a message to our parents, with young children especially, titled the message, Correction That Delivers a Child from Hell. And I take it from Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14, which is where my title comes from. You may open your Bibles there. Recognize this morning that not every one of us here are parents, but I think that it can be beneficial for every one of us as we understand what God desires from our lives and how to relate and how to be a blessing. And the fact is, this morning, every one of us has an influence on others. Every one of us has an influence on others. And God has called those of you who are parents to have an influence for righteousness on their lives. And this lies in your lap as you raise them up for God. How you respond. Proverbs 23, verse 13, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. I should talk a little bit about a couple words here. Withhold not correction. That thought of correction is, or that word correction has the idea of a halt, a halter or restraint. Withhold not a halter or a restraint from the child, for if thou beatest him, this idea of beating him with the rod many times is misunderstood, I think. The rod here, if you look that up, refers to like a switch off the end of like a willow tree, that thin, slender switch and how it's so flexible. It's not hard on the physical body, but it leaves some pain so they understand. And that's this idea of just beating and in terms of how we think of it. If thou strikest him with the rod, with that switch, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. I'm glad this morning that I was blessed to have parents that cared about my footsteps. And those of us who are older and realize the impact of our parents' lives on ourselves, certainly appreciate corrective discipline. The scriptures talk about two different people's houses or children. As I think of what comes out in terms of Eli's house versus what comes out in terms of Abraham's house, I want to turn there and just read a few verses. Why did God deal with Eli's house? 1 Samuel 2. Read a couple verses there in 1 Samuel 2. Verses 29 and 30. And then in chapter 3, verses 13 and 14, I'd like to read these verses. We know what was taking place here. We know how Eli's sons, they were grown sons, but he was responsible in terms of high priest. And in verse 29, he says, wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Wherefore the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, be it far from me, for them that honor me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Chapter 3, verse 13, for I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vow, and he restrained them not. And therefore I have sworn unto the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering forever. Why did God deal with Eli's house? He says, because his sons made themselves vow, and he restrained them not. He restrained them not. for the iniquity which he knoweth. Genesis 18 and verse 19, that verse we know in terms of Abraham and God's promise to him. God says of Abraham, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord, to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken." If we want the blessing of God on us and our families, we're going to have to understand what he's talking about there in Proverbs and apply it for corrective discipline. It's so correlated. You cannot separate discipline in terms of raising our children to deliver them from hell. Cannot be separated from righteousness and what goes with it. Eli was in trouble, you might say. What happened to the family of Eli was taught by words without actions to back it up. That's what was happening. He was simply saying, "Well, sons, you shouldn't do that." And God said you needed to go a step further and deal with it. Whereas Abraham's family was a direct link in his faith to God, and because of his faith in God, he helped them do justice and judgment. He helped them in those areas. We must view this subject from God's perspective, not man's. Today, society says, don't spank your child. That's not true. According to the scriptures, that's not true. That's not the right approach. It's not just times out. It's more than that. It's more than that. I know we need wisdom in relating to our society. I'm not arguing that. But may we understand the importance of correction that delivers a child from hell. What important character traits were missing in Eli's sons? One of the purposes of correction needs to build in our children self-discipline and self-restraint. That's one of our goals by correcting them, to help them learn self-discipline and self-restraint. That was missing in Eli's sons. There they were when people brought their offerings, they wanted all they wanted out of it first, no matter what God said. And they stabbed their fork or cauldron into it, as the way it says, and whatever came out, that was theirs, even if someone protested. They lacked self-discipline and they lacked self-restraint. They also lacked respect for authority. And I know we earn respect, but we also must teach respect. We must teach respect. And that's important as we think of this subject. I would like to get into the practical side of this subject and raise a number of questions this morning and try to answer them. These answers are certainly from my perspective and the little bit that I know and can be added to, or a little bit that I'm still learning. But what stands in the way that may cause parents to miss the mark on this subject? What stands in the way? A lack of concern for our children's future stands in the way. If we are not concerned for our children's future, there's something wrong this morning. As Christian people, every one of us should be concerned about the souls of our children, that they are directed back to God. They're pointed that way, that we do all we can to help them grow up in Him and yield their lives to Him. We want to be individuals that are concerned and not lack concern for the future well-being of our children. Another thing that can stand in our way and cause us to miss the mark is selfish goals and pursuits. If we have selfish goals and pursuits and we pursue them, don't be surprised when you go on and your children are grown when they take their own way too. They learned it from you. They learned it from you. Thirdly, a lack of cohesion among parents. When parents have different goals And those that are not worked out where they endeavor to work under the same goal, that lack of cohesion brings chaos. Brings chaos in the home. I certainly encourage you as parents to endeavor to administer the same discipline. Be working together in terms of how you apply that. Who gets what? You know, if one parent says no and the other parent says yes, you can't expect the child to understand and behave like he should. He's going to go to the one he wants to. And listen to that one. And it makes chaos. Another thing that stands in the way and makes us miss the mark on this subject is if we're overly busy. And this can be even good things. One of the challenges that everybody faces in this generation is giving time to their families. We face that challenge. But we can be overly busy because we choose to be overly busy. Maybe we need to back off on some things. Hard to know how to answer that whole question. Fifthly, a lack of dependence on God for wisdom and divine blessing. If my children, or if our children, end out right, it's because of God working in their hearts. It's not some credit that goes to me as a parent. But as a parent, I must look to God for His wisdom. And so it is important that we open the Scriptures and we apply the Scriptures. Proverbs has a lot of instruction in terms of it. And I appreciate the book of Proverbs. It's not the only book in the Bible that gives direction. God's Word gives direction all through it. Let's depend on God for wisdom, His wisdom, and His blessing. We certainly need it. God blessed Abraham's house, and there was a blessing there that stood because God blessed it. God wanted to bless Eli's house, but He had to remove the blessing because there was no restraint. And that's sad. That's sad. Another thing that can stand in the way is my own personal pride. Our personal pride and a false belief system about the inborn needs of our children. Your child that sits in your lap, though it's so beautiful and God has made them so wonderful, they are not just little angels. They are not just little angels. They need to be directed. They need to be directed. I pity the household where I see them viewing their children as little angels, and all they do is simply cater to their wants. I pity the children in that household. They need some direction. They need some direction. Failing to continue to build one step at a time stands in our way. If we fail to build one step at a time, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. You know, I'm glad God gives us a number of years in directing our children. But we need to continue to build one step at a time. Just keep right on, keep right on, keep right on. And it's amazing how God works in helping them go in the right direction. How will the church this morning be impacted when this subject is dealt with in all seriousness? When children learn the blessing of self-restraint, when children learn the blessing of submission to authority in their lives, what does that do for the church? How does that affect our Bible schools? How does that affect church life? How does that affect ongoing church life? It has a real impact as to what will happen in the future of a local congregation. It had a big impact in Eli's house. In fact, Eli's house affected Israel's response to bringing an offering. Because there was no self-restraint, because there was a lack of respect for authority, because authority was not using the discipline they needed to in correcting the situation, Things became chaotic, and men despised coming to the house of the Lord to bring their offerings, as well as the debauchery that was there in a moral way. Men abhorred the offering of the Lord, 1 Samuel 2 and verse 17. But I'm here to tell you that when God's way is followed, the community testimony will be enhanced. Our Bible schools will be a blessing for our youth. Church authority will be respected. Churches will continue to know and understand what peaceful church life is. Sometimes we want to point our fingers and say, well, you leaders have messed up, but maybe we need to stop and think, how am I teaching my family? What impact is my life having on my family? How am I responding in self-restraint in my own life? How am I responding to respect to authority in my own life? What influence am I leaving by how I respond? The rod and reproof give wisdom. Proverbs 29:15. But a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Discipline this morning involves not only the use of the rod, but also verbal intellectual instruction. They need to go hand in hand. Not only the use of the rod, but as a child grows, there needs to be that verbal intellectual instruction. Both. You can't just separate and say, well, I'm going to apply the verbal and not use the rod. It won't work. Neither by themselves are sufficient. You'd understand that this morning. And we can't expect our children to always go the right path themselves. They're going to need to be directed. A child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame is simply saying, in my own words, you let him do what he wants to and he'll turn out rotten. You let him do what he wants to and he'll be in prison. Many times, anyhow. So I want to consider the solemn charge this morning that this text gave us as we think of delivering their soul from hell. Who is calling parents to do this? This morning, God is calling us to do this. It's a message from God. It's God's voice to us through wisdom's voice in the Proverbs. We need to recognize and we need to realize who gives the children to us. They're gifts from God to us. They're God's gifts to us. These bundles of joy that he entrusts into our care. Hannah understood that. She said, I have lent him to the Lord for as long as he liveth. And I'm blessed as I see that there and how Samuel was used by God. And amazing, in the midst of being there in Eli's house, there was that is just amazing to me. The link to that fact that she had lent him to God and she had a focus that had, in the few years that she had influenced his life, and they say most of them are formed in the first 4 or 5 years of their lives. She had influenced her child in a right direction. Certainly positive. I don't know what she told him, how long she spent whenever she came up there year by year and brought him another coat. I don't know what all happened. I don't know if she wrote letters to her son. She didn't have a cell phone to pick up and talk to him. But I'm sure there was some communication. But she understood he was from God, and she gave him back to God. This morning, as parents, it's a little bit like your pilots. You think of a plane, and pilots are the ones flying the plane. And if the two pilots don't agree, and they try to fly the plane different directions, it's not going to work, is it? It's not going to work. The craft you're guiding is the lives of your children. You're guiding the lives of your children. The craft you're guiding. I'd say the craft they guide is their home, and the passengers are like their children. That's the way I want to word it. The craft you guide is your home, and your passengers are your children. And if you're going to be a good pilot, you're going to have to stay alert to the needs and the voice of God in your life. You're going to have to hear the instructions of God and how to help in terms of the needs of your family. And you're going to have to work together as pilots. Good pilots work together so they don't wreck the plane and everyone in it. May God help us to rise to that challenge so we don't wreck our homes. So we don't wreck our homes. I'd like to list a number of signs that correction is needed. We understand the fact that God is the one who has given us these gifts, but God is entrusting us to give them direction. And there are a number of ways rebellion can show up. We know in a small child, the stiffening of the limbs at a very young age can signal rebellion. I'm not saying it always does. It can signal rebellion as they stiffen their limbs and they resist in terms of what their parents are trying to get them to do. It's a sign that correction may be needed. A small child may hold his breath because he doesn't get what he wants. Now, children aren't dumb. They're not dumb a bit. I was really impressed with that being out at our daughter's, our married daughter's, with her son. He's had to have an operation this year. And with the fluid that was on the brain in the past and how that affected him, he would bang your head quicker because of how it hurt in his head. But now he's trying to do this thing of slapping his head when something's, you know. How do you respond to that? And the doctor there talking to them said, you know, children are smarter than you think. They think you back off in terms of something, they'll do something. They'll think through it. And you know, that may be something he's doing, but your child may just simply hold its breath so you don't do something. So you don't do something. They're not dumb. They figure us out real quick. It's amazing all the things they can come up with. Crying with unusual gusto when there is nothing physically wrong. Parent has to decide between whether there's something physically wrong or not. Usually you can hear it in their cry. But just crying with unusual gusto when there's nothing physically wrong may be a sign that they need some help. They need some direction. They're trying to get their own way by crying with this unusual gusto rather than you giving the correction that is needed because of what they're doing. Sluggishness in carrying out orders as they grow older. Sluggishness in carrying out orders can be a sign or a way rebellion can show up. Expressions of unhappiness or grumpiness after a parent has made a decision contrary to the child's thinking. This is all native to children. Expressions of unhappiness or grumpiness after a parent has made a decision contrary to the child's thinking. It's not love, parents, to always feed to their ideas. We like our children. We want to appreciate them. We want a good relationship. But I'm here to tell you, if you're bowing to that, you're bowing to a wrong thing. You're bowing to a wrong thing. Unhappiness or grumpiness, just because you cross their will, you're doing them a favor to help them understand they need to surrender. Later on, they're going to need to surrender to God. And if they haven't learned to surrender to their parents, they won't surrender to God. Sixthly, another way rebellion can show up: whining again and again in order to get what is forbidden but still wanted. So they just sit there whining, persisting and persisting, persisting with that whining. Spirit hasn't been helped come to the place where they surrender. Defiantly obeying orders. That can be a real challenge depending on the nature of your child. Some children just are ready to defiantly disobey orders, and the next child's more docile. They vary. It's amazing how differently they vary. Doesn't mean they don't have a will, but some will defiantly disobey orders. We need to rise to the challenge and help them. Deal with that. Don't let that defiance continue to grow. Maybe acting as if they didn't hear what you said can be a response of rebellion, acting as if they didn't hear what you said, what was said. We need to make sure they know we said what we said, but we need to carry it through, not let them get away with that. Or a talking back or arguing with parents. I can see that happening in Eli's house. I can see that happening all up through. His sons were probably used to talking back and arguing with Dad. And then when they got older and Dad said, no, you shouldn't do this, he didn't have any authority there. They had formed a platform long ago that continued to work for their undoing. When a child unhesitatingly corrects his parents, it's a sign or way rebellion can show up. Unhesitatingly correcting his parents. I'd like to just read some verses in Proverbs. I think it's important that we love verses that give us direction. Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. That ties right in with one of my points I just made about them crying. Let not thy soul spare for his crying. Chasten while there's hope, while they're young. Don't wait till they're too old to deal with. Start while they're young. Proverbs 22 and verse 15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. This idea of foolish, Strong says, means perverse or stubbornness or being contrary. Proverbs 26 and verse 3. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. A rod for the fool's back. Proverbs 29 and verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. I read that verse earlier. Verse 17. Correct thy son, and he will give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. I say, correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. You know, it is so amazing how that works. Parents, sometimes you become uneasy. You're trying to deal with things. You become frustrated, and you fail to give the correction needed. And it's just multiplying the struggle on both sides. Certainly we need to correct when we are in the frame of mind to do it, when we are not angry. But we need to rise to the challenge so there can be rest in our homes. I'd like to next consider setting the stage for valuable achievement. Just a few thoughts in terms of this, or a number maybe. How can we set the stage for valuable achievement? The goal of correction is achievement, valuable achievement. I think it starts as we deal with ourselves in being a worthy example and role model. Proverbs 20 and verse 7, the just man walketh in his integrity, his children are blessed after him. The just man walketh in his integrity, his children are blessed after him. Practice self-discipline in your own life, in your eating, in your reading, in your working, in listening to your child's questions, in helping your child with their needs or projects, in taking time for their needs. That's a self-discipline, because we say, well, I'm too busy. Take some time for their needs. That's part of self-discipline in our own lives many times. I can look back and see where I have made mistakes in that area and not taking the time that I should have for the needs of my children as they were growing. Maybe let work be too much of an emphasis in my life and not give the time that I should have given. God only gives us one chance. Now, it's a number of years. But he only gives us one chance with each child, as so to speak. Let's rise to the challenge. I encourage you as young parents, take time for your children and their desires in helping feed that so you can build a strong relationship as you grow up through relating to your children. But be a worthy example and role model. You can't expect your child to love the Scriptures if you don't love the Scriptures. You can't expect your child to want to go to church if you don't want to go to church. You can't expect your child to rise above you and be a loyal helper in terms of Sunday school or whatever if you're not interested in God's program and being involved. Be a role model. Be a role model for them to follow. It was not hard for Abraham to convince his children that he loved the Lord because of what he had done and was doing, and his concern for Lot and the way he related to Lot. Gave selflessly. Let Lot choose first. Prayed for Lot. Cared about Lot. All those influences, those role models that he left. It's no wonder Isaac was a man of peace. Because he understood the Prince of Peace. And that's beautiful as I think of that. The effect that Abraham had on his family. Secondly, endeavor to be an emotionally stable person. And by this I'm talking as you administer discipline. Avoid administering it when your impulse is anger towards the child. Deal with your own impulse first before you reach out to deal with your child's. So endeavor to be an emotionally stable person. That's one aspect of it, you might say, avoiding administering discipline on impulsive anger. But we're thinking of setting the stage for valuable achievement. Insist on obedience the first time. It is much better to never command the child to do something than to command and not follow through with it. I'm not saying never command. I'm saying it's much better to not command than to command and not follow through with it. You're confusing your child as to what dad really means when you command and don't follow through it, or mom. It's important. We insist on obedience the first time you command the child. Be as consistent as possible. Don't be a wishy-washy parent. One time you're requiring this over here, then all of a sudden that's changed and we're way over here. We don't require much. Over here we do. And the child is trying to figure out, well, what are you saying? Where's the lines? And they're not, you're producing instability in your child's life. Be as consistent as possible. You know, and that consistency can be a challenge from one child to the next as you relate in the home. Try to be consistent. That's a real challenge. I bring these points to you this morning, not as someone that has always attained, but I believe these are important points, and this needs to be our goal as we relate to our children. Link the discipline with the offense as quickly as possible, especially in small children. Link that discipline with the offense. Disobedience and defiance needs to spell pain for the child. And then when that defiance has been dealt with, show them your love in the sense of holding them close and help them understand. It's not that I'm still angry with you. We've dealt with that. It's over. It's over. Does that make any sense to you? Link the discipline with the offense as quickly as possible, especially with small children. Don't get in the habit of begging or pleading to get your child to obey orders. Rather, kindly tell them and expect results. So dad says, when you start down this begging row, and then the child doesn't respond, they soon learn, well, when dad says it the third time, then it means obey. Or the fourth time. Until then, it doesn't mean I have to. I say, don't get in the habit of begging or pleading to get your child to obey orders. Rather, kindly tell them and expect results. Next point I have, I think, really needs to be emphasized. Give commendation regularly and sincerely. They are emotional beings. They need to know they're loved. They need to be commended for those areas that they are doing their best in. There will be a difference in this child and that child as to how perfectly they can perform, if I can use that word perfectly, what all they are capable of doing. There'll be a difference. We must recognize those differences, but we must commend them. Commend them. Every one of you here today appreciates commendation. I commend you for paying attention this morning. You appreciate commendation. And your child appreciates them. It's linked with commendation. I say linked with it, it's sort of beside it. Let your children know they're loved. I pity the child that comes into this world and has parents that didn't want them. They started out on a wrong basis totally. And that child will sense that. And that child will struggle with acceptance. And that child may respond in rebellion. What ways that are rebellion? Because he seeks to be noticed. And that's sad. Tell your child you love them. Studies show that those who do that, there's a big difference between that and those who don't, and how their relationships are. Not only tell your child you love them, but show them. Show your child you love them. Love is communicated in a variety of ways. Maybe simply the pat on the back. Acceptance. There's love shown by that pat. Encouraging words. Whatever it is. Give them commendation regularly and sincerely for worthy performance. And continue to shower love on your children in a profitable way. Eighth point I have is avoid confrontation that humiliates them in public. Avoid confrontation, especially with your older children, that humiliates them in public before their peers. Must endeavor to avoid that if we want our children to grow up and our influence upon them in terms of discipline is effective. Last one I have is start early before the child develops bad habits while there is hope. Start that discipline process while there's hope, before they're set in all their habits. Help them form habits that can be a blessing in their lives. So important to start early. Lastly, I would like to think yet on how we can stay focused on our goal. The goal is to have correction that delivers our child's soul from hell. How can we stay focused on this goal? Pray for your child's spiritual well-being. I was privileged to be able to be in a home where I regularly heard my parents pray for every one of us children in family worship. And their concern for us as parents. I endeavored to do that for my own children. Not only that way, but in private. Pray for your child's spiritual well-being. It's God that has to work in their hearts and lives. We're vessels only here given the little gifts that God gives us, and we're trying to direct their footsteps. And who else do we want to work in this? It's God that needs to work in our homes. It's God that needs to help us bring our children up for Him. And we need His help. If you're not needy, you won't pray. But if you're needy, you will pray. Pray for your child's spiritual well-being. Keep first things first. Keep first things first. You're doing right to be here this morning and worshiping God. Keep first things first. So important in our lives. I would like to simply look at a verse in the New Testament. As I think of this, what did Jesus' parents do for him, or do with him? In Luke 2 and verse verses 41 to 52, you have the account of them taking him up to the temple. His parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. Remember, this feast was, every male was required to be at this feast throughout Israel. You were supposed to be at Jerusalem for the Passover. There were three feasts in the year that every male was supposed to be to. And this was one of them. Here he is, he brings his family, Joseph and Mary, go to this feast of the Passover. Jesus is with them. They return on the way back and don't realize that Jesus is right there with them. They thought he's with the friends walking as they're walking back, and come to realize that and turn around and go back and find him. And we know his response in verse 49 comes out of his mission as a son of God as well. But how is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business? But verse 51 says, and he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. Notice the next verse. Verse 52 gives us four aspects that we want our children to grow in. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and in favor with man. The four areas that you want your child to mature in. First is intellectually, in wisdom. Jesus was there talking with the doctors. As a child, he was growing intellectually. We want to help our children. We want to guard the influences in our children's lives. So we encourage growth in the right ways and deal with those areas that can destroy it intellectually, in wisdom. So one of the beautiful things is we can have a Bible and we can read it in our homes. We can help them grow intellectually in that way. Jesus increased in stature. He grew physically. His parents were concerned about him physically. They wondered of his whereabouts. They wanted to know he was safe. They wanted to know that he was coming along with them. They weren't so concerned to the point where they just sat over him every minute. He was growing. He was maturing. But they were concerned. Physically. Spiritually. In favor with God. We want our children to be directed spiritually. And in that, it's so important that the books we have in our home help them spiritually. Reading material has a big impact on a child's life. Their brain is there to soak up everything. Let's fill them with... There's too many books in the world to get them all read. Why not give them the best books that can help them and enhance them spiritually? And we're blessed to have church papers, you name it, for different age levels. And I really appreciate all that's available for us today. Let's not just take it all for granted. Parents, rise to the challenge. Endeavor to help your children spiritually. Give them reading material that will bless their hearts and point them in the right direction. And socially. And I'm glad in this passage that it's depicted as them letting him walk with some others and then not realizing he was there and becoming concerned. But some parents just want to lord over their children and not let them reach out socially as well. And I don't know where all those boundaries are. I'm not here to give you an exact boundary in terms of that. But we need to let them some breathing room that they can relate with their friends and yet be concerned about it. Just like his parents were here. They need to grow socially. These four basic needs. This is the goal that every parent wants to help their children grow in. Every parent should have. That our child grows intellectually. That they grow physically. Of course, you're very concerned if they don't grow physically. That they grow spiritually. Favor with God. And that they grow socially. Well, as I think of this subject today, correction that delivers a child from hell. I'm glad again that God gives us one day at a time. We don't need to get across this all in one day, but we must understand the principles. And I especially encourage you as young parents, pray. I emphasize that again. Pray. Seek God's wisdom. Look into this book for direction. Seek the input of others who have walked before you faithfully. Their advice. Because there's a whole host of books out there that come from a whole different perspective. And I don't believe we as people of God need to be in those books when this book gives us so much direction. May God again help us to rise to the challenge and direct our families for Him. Shall we kneel in prayer?